I'm Stepfaser from the Jakarta Presidential Palace in Indonesia. For the first time, Indonesia holds the presidency of 20 of the world's largest economies known as the G20. The motto of the summit is Pulih Bersama Bangkit Lebih Kuat, recover together, recover stronger. But with world powers divided over the war in Ukraine, is togetherness even possible? And what other challenges does the summit represent for Indonesia? Will Russian President Vladimir Putin attend? Some of the questions we put to the Indonesian President Joko Widodo talks to Al Jazeera. President Joko Widodo of Indonesia, thank you so much for talking to Al Jazeera. You have invited me to a very unusual location for a presidential interview, but we will reveal to the audience what the reason is why we are here later. But first, I want to ask you about this very important international geopolitical meeting that you are organizing right now, the G20. And it's happening at a very, very difficult time globally. You have invited both President Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine. They have both confirmed that they will attend the meeting.
Until now, they still express their willingness to attend the meeting. The situation is not easy. And in addition, the rivalry that is present gets more and more pronounced. However, we still expect that Putin and President Zelensky will be able to attend this meeting to foster room for dialogue and to find solutions.
You have seen, of course, also the images coming out of Ukraine, civilians being targeted by the Russian military. Has it crossed your mind? Have you considered of expelling President Putin from the meeting? Because some leaders are calling him, they have accused him of committing war crimes. Have you considered him not inviting him?
It's a really challenging situation. It is not an easy matter. Setting up a dialogue space is also not simple. Since the rivalry is getting more intense, that's what we want to bridge. But once again, it's not simple.
But some leaders say they want to isolate President Putin for what is happening in Ukraine. You say we need to talk to him.
Isolating doesn't solve the problem. Rather, it just makes it worse. What's important here is how to make a dialogue or negotiation to produce agreements.
If other leaders say that he has committed war crimes, do you agree with them?
Again, this would be better resolved through discussion table, by sitting together to find a common solution, not sanctions.
So what would be your ideal solution? What would be your best outcome of the G20?
Regarding war, again, it is crucial to provide room for dialogue. Therefore, through dialogue, it is expected that an agreement will be formed. After an agreement is formed, a ceasefire will happen. If a ceasefire has happened, the war will end and peace will follow.
You have met both leaders, right? You traveled to Moscow to meet Vladimir Putin, and also you went to Kiev. Were you trying to mediate in the conflict? Did you try to make some kind of agreement, and did it fail?
Well, I discussed a lot about peace, considering that we want stability on geopolitics and also stability on world politics and also world economy to promote better economic growth, not like what we have now. And my purpose to go there was to carry out a humanitarian and peace missions, especially in preventing food crisis. So my main concern was on food crisis at the time, because President Zelensky said that it has 22 million tons of grain in Ukraine, and the new harvest is around 55 million tons, meaning there is 77 million tons of grain. Meanwhile, in Russia, President Putin revealed that the country has 130 million tons of grain. In total, we have 207 million tons, a very large number. If the stock is not distributed, then there will be a food crisis. That's the problem that we want to bridge at the time.
Some people say that the solution would just simply be Russia, Vladimir Putin, withdraws from Ukraine and then the war is over. Do you see, after you met him, that there is a possibility? Do you see that there might be an opening, or is it just getting worse?
Again, the most important thing, the first point, is to sit together in one table, to have negotiation, to have a dialogue, to have a communication. Therefore, we have solution. I don't want to speculate about any other matters than that.
But there's also going to be President Joe Biden, Xi Jinping is expected to come as well. Do you feel maybe there is going to be a lot of heated discussions?
It doesn't matter. If the dialogue or meeting situation gets heated, no problem. Even if the meeting gets heated, it's not a problem. So long as there is a solution, there's a dialogue. I think, why not? Competition and rivalry are common, no problem, as long as they're managed properly to avoid open conflict. And after the problem is over, global economic recovery will happen. Without that, we cannot talk about economic recovery.
Because we're not only talking about conflict in Europe right now, but tensions in your region here in Asia are also increasing, also because of the military muscles that China is showing. How worried are you that your country, that the South China Sea, that that's going to be affected?
Yeah, I was not only talking about the rivalry in the war in Ukraine, but also the rivalry in the region. And once again, don't expect prosperity without stability. Therefore, we in Asia, we will continue to maintain that the Indo-Pacific region can be peaceful and to avoid the potential for open conflict. Because economic development and growth take place when there is a political and geopolitical stability, and peace will come out. From there, economic development will happen.
You have met President Xi Jinping also recently. What was your message to him to calm down the situation?
Well, first, Indonesia adheres to a free and active foreign policy. Therefore, Indonesia prioritizes cooperation and collaboration with anyone and any country based on the principle of mutual respect and the principle of mutual benefit. So, the People's Republic of China is Indonesia's strategic partner. America, the U.S., is also Indonesia's strategic partner. I can have a dialogue with President Joe Biden. I can also talk to President Xi Jinping. And I want to invite both of them to discuss and find a common solution for the region and also for the world.
They haven't met directly, right, Joe Biden and Xi Jinping. Do you think that they're going to meet in Bali and together with the two of them?
That is why having a dialogue space is crucial. Therefore, common solution can be found.
So you think that there will be progress after the meeting? There will be some movement during the G20?
If dialogue space is available and discussion can occur again, we will find a solution. We indeed, we don't want to appear to have any inclination, because Indonesia again adheres to open and active foreign politics. Therefore, Indonesia can be accepted in any country. That is what we want to get, to create a beneficial discussion.
But Indonesia has a voice in the UN General Assembly. And there's been also resolutions, for example, this week against Russian annexation of territories in Ukraine. Indonesia voted in favor of this resolution. So you make choices where Indonesia stands in this conflict.
Well, indeed, at one point we must decide. We must decide this carefully in order for our neutrality to stay apparent. And once again, Indonesia has always adhered to and respected international law and the UN Charter, particularly regarding the respect for territorial sovereignty and the territorial integrity of every country.
But for example, China is investing in your country $40 billion compared to the United States only $9 billion. Is the influence of China not getting much higher, much bigger than the United States, for example? Is the United States losing its battle here?
We are open to anyone and to any country. In terms of investment, for example, we welcome every country. However, if a country reacts faster and has better communication, then you cannot blame Indonesia if we choose to go to a certain country.
So the communication is not so good from the United States?
No, we have good communication with all countries.
What should they do?
But certain countries have more intense communication for collaboration. You know, collaboration must be mutually beneficial, and Indonesia is ready to partner with anyone, with any country, and once again, based on the principle of mutual respect and mutual benefit.
But you have a feeling that maybe the United States doesn't show enough respect, or is questioning too much, or...
Well, maybe because of the physical distance, maybe.
It's just a physical distance. You think?
Maybe.
Well, you talked about communication.
I cannot urge a country to be close to Indonesia, right?
We talked about the crisis, right, in the world right now. There is a recession also dooming in Europe. There's an energy crisis. We have a food crisis. Prices are going up. Indonesia's inflation is still relatively low compared to 4.9 compared to other countries. But you had to raise the fuel price. You lowered the very costly subsidies. There is a risk that the food prices in Indonesia will go up. How worried are you? Because your population is still fragile if you look at their income, of course.
I am worried for sure. But I see that all country leaders are concerned about the same thing. And according to the World Food Program, up to 825 million people go to bed hungry. Now, this is what all country leaders must feel, the empathy, how difficult their people's lives are today.
Including in Indonesia.
And the key here is to reopen food supply chain. Regarding Indonesia, in the past 3 years, Indonesia stopped importing rice. With sufficient supply, we can control and stabilize the price. We can manage it. And every day I monitor the market. I check the price regarding rice and garlics and eggs and also chilies.
Every day you look at it?
Yeah. Every time I visit a certain region, I check the food price because it is very important now. And I have asked to the governors and mayors to use the contingency budget and the 2% of the general allocation fund from the central government can be used to stabilize rising price for goods and services, especially food inflation. Now, this is how we fight inflation so that it is not as high as in other countries.
So you're concerned but still optimistic that Indonesia can ride this through?
I am worried, but I'm still optimistic that we can manage this. Our economic growth in the second quarter of 2022 reached 5.4%, and our inflation in August reached 4.9%. I think we should be grateful for that.
But it's important that there will be peace in the world and no wars that will drive prices up.
That is what we are worried about, that war and rivalry between countries will not get better or even worse. That's what we're afraid of, because the IMF has predicted that the global economy by 2023 will decrease to below 2.7% from what was previously estimated to experience recovery.
That would affect Indonesia as well.
And true, and that can affect Indonesia as well.
We're talking about the energy transition, and Indonesia has the largest nickel reserves in the world. You're very active now trying to make car factories invest in Indonesia to have renewable cars, like electric cars. How is that going? Because you had an agreement with Elon Musk, but we haven't heard anything after that.
Well, I've had two phone calls with Elon Musk, and I have met him once at SpaceX, and my coordinating ministers maybe have met him more than 10 times in meetings.
What is delaying it at the moment?
You ask Elon Musk about that. For sure, Indonesia is ready to become an electric car development site for any country, for any company, and for everyone.
But does it have to do something with the investment climate in Indonesia, that some countries, maybe in Europe and the United States, are reluctant to invest in the industry?
Well, because we have the market. The consumers are there. The demand is there. So we have them.
Are you surprised that they are not all coming very quickly?
Well, maybe investors consider the current world economic situation. However, with what Indonesia has done, including a structural reform for investment, we have omnibus law, a massive and evenly distributed infrastructure development in Java and other regions. And I think this is an appealing factor, and I think the opportunity to invest is now, although the global economic situation is not really that well. But again, it comes to the investors and companies who will make the investment to Indonesia.
Indonesia has been criticized for the deforestation, right? It's also been called the third largest emitter of greenhouse gas after China and the United States because of land clearing. You have taken a lot of measures to reforestation and stop also the export of palm oil a couple of months ago, which has been, I think, changed again at the moment. But my question is, do you feel that the criticism on Indonesia for its deforestation is in a way unfair, because it's coming from countries who have already developed their economies and their industries, and that you feel that you have to balance this dilemma the whole time?
First of all, before, you know, even go there, I mean, every year, forest fires always happen. and it, you know, has burned more than 2 million hectares of land. And in 2015, we have successfully mitigated it, and the forest fire case has decreased by up to 85%. Second, we have restored the peatlands in the last 5 years. Okay, we have done that. And starting this year, we have started restoring mangroves. And by establishing a nursery center like this one, but this is especially for mangroves, and that is in Bali. And here, which is in West Java, we have also established a nursery center that produces every year 12 million tree seeds, either calandra, eucalyptus, manglit, and teak, and various variants of trees, and other than for environment, it also supports economic growth. So between environment and economy aspects, they can grow simultaneously. This is what we are looking for.
In reality, you still have to cut down forest to develop projects or roads. I mean, in Indonesia, still every year, there's still a lot of forest being cut down. So it's not realistic, I think, to do it both at the same time.
I think we have to address both at the same time. We want to achieve a green economy, and at the same time, we also want to develop infrastructure. Both have to go in parallel. Without infrastructure, how can we run industries? Without infrastructure, how can economy can grow?
But what you see now with the energy crisis happening all over the world, that the energy transition is now being delayed.
Absolutely.
Germany is using coal again, and I heard they even come to Indonesia to buy coal. But it is a bit hypocrite, right? So talking about energy transition and then come to buy coal.
Well, as you see, we are in a difficult situation. This is not a normal situation. We do not have better options.
Last question, because, of course, we met each other often, and also 8 years ago, before you became the president of Indonesia. And, of course, we talked about the expectations and the promises you made. Now we are 8 years later. You're nearly through your second term, your last term as president. There's a lot of criticism on, you know, that you didn't keep the promises of democratic reform, basically that the democracy was undermined, critics have been severely fined, the army has a bigger role, the eradication commission has been sort of weakened. What happened to Joko Widodo, the man of the people?
Well, the global situation now is not easy, but I am pleased with the improvement of the foundations for Indonesia's competitiveness.
But this is all about the economy. Did you have to sacrifice democracy for economy?
Regarding democracy, I think, you know, if we look at our five elections, everything runs well. And regarding the freedom of opinion, the freedom to express people's mind, what haven't we done? Everyone can say whatever they want now.
But opposition is harder now.
They can even mock the president. They can mock the president now.
Without ending up in prison?
They can mock the president now. And, you know, many of them ridicule the president. I see almost every day in social media. And also, we don't stop, you know, room for democracy. So what kind of freedoms that, you know, we are debating?
You have no regrets?
Well, I think, I'm sure that the democracy in Indonesia has been on the right track. And even I think it has, you know, passed the limit.
Why? Sorry.
Well, I think it's too far because Indonesia preserves the Eastern culture. which is full of manners and politeness. And so I think Indonesia's democracy is Pancasila democracy.
And it's different than the Western democracy.
It cannot be compared to democracy in the Western countries.
President Joko Widodo of Indonesia, thank you so much for talking to Al Jazeera.
You're welcome.